This is the Self-Taught or Not podcast with
Dylan Israel
and Eric Hanchett, where we teach you the do's and don'ts of software development from two software development professionals, one self-taught and one not.
All right. Today we're going to have a nice sort of practical podcast. It's really how I like to think about it. And it's going to be about, you know, some of the resources and how to get started in front-end engineering, something Eric and I have been doing for a while now. And I think we can provide some insight and some tips, some things that we did, and also just a general path of not only how to learn it, whether it's for a hobby or maybe a personal project, but also how to maybe learn it in a way that will help you get your foot in the door.
This is the dream for a lot of new junior developers, is to learn the skills to become a front-end engineer. And also, I think it's, of all the different paths you can go on to learn programming, I think front-end is a great way to go because the concepts are easy to grasp. Not all of them. A lot of them are easier to grasp, I think. And also, you have something visual to see at the end of the day. You can look at something and see it because you have the HTML and CSS and everything in front of you.
Yeah, and I think that's a great place to start. And oftentimes when you're going to like a coding boot camp, it starts with front-end engineering for that exact reason and sort of really the building blocks of web development. I think at times people think that being a front-end engineer maybe isn't the most in-demand skill or doesn't pay the best. But if you know, recently the 2020 Stack Overflow survey came out, and the salary difference, and in the U.S. that is, between a front-end engineer and a full-stack engineer was $5,000. So it's pretty much the identical when you're talking about six-figure salaries. And it's just I've been doing a lot of front-end engineering, and every time I go to the back-end, it seems like a lot of people, for whatever reason, much prefer back-end than front-end. But I just really tend to like being able to manipulate the UI, but that's the same thing people hate about it.
Yeah, it depends on who, like, what your personality is and what you like to do. I think sometimes when I first got into CSS, and I fully admit this, when I started my web development journey, I was not very good at CSS, and it was a little bit of a struggle, but after I had learned some of the basics of it, it got much easier. And I still think, like, there's a lot of people that are way better than CSS than me and that are amazing at SAS. But I came from like a back-end background, I like that. And where I just really liked the, you know, talking to APIs and the talking to databases and that logic. And that was what I did for years. But then when I started learning the front end, it just, something just clicked and I just really liked it. It just took a little bit of time. I have a question for you, Dylan. And I've seen this was going around in a Twitter thread the other day. Do you consider HTML and CSS programming or programming language or coding?
So yeah, I see this question a lot, and I think it doesn't matter. I think this is one of the things that's more like semantics. And if you really wanted to boil it down, it's a technology that we use, is like how I look at it. And so although I don't think it's a programming language in the sense of there are certain characteristics programming languages have, I do think of it as a technology that has some sort of syntax that we need to follow. And the way I thought about this is, and I sort of came to this distinction, was at the end of the day, do I consider Markdown, which is just an abbreviated library of HTML, would I consider Markdown a programming language? And the answer was no. But I do think it's a technology that can fall into that same sort of category because it's so fundamental. The one thing that separates it from like some of these offshoot like libraries or very niche things is that HTML and CSS is fundamental to all development. And there is a good way of writing it and a bad way, and there are ways to break your HTML and break your CSS. So in a way, there's a little bit of logic, but I wouldn't necessarily say it falls into the programming language category, but I understand why it does when you're doing like surveys and things like that.
I think people listen to this and they hear HTML, CSS, and I know we're kind of jumping the gun here a second of what technologies you need to learn, but obviously HTML, CSS is one of them. And people think that by saying it's not a coding language or a programming language, it sort of, what's the word? It puts it down maybe a little bit, or you're less of a programmer if you just do HTML and CSS. And I guess maybe, like you said, it's more of a semantic thing. It's definitely something useful that you need to learn, especially if you're learning front-end engineering. I like the logic and the idea of it's definitely not a programming language. I guess sometimes people consider programming languages if it's Turing complete. I'm not going to get into that. It's kind of a computer science-y type of question if something is Turing complete, but it's not for HTML and CSS. But I do wholeheartedly mostly agree with what you're saying there.
Yeah, so let's get into sort of the core part of front-end engineering. We've already touched on two of the three. So there's HTML and CSS, and then there's really JavaScript at the end of the day, which is our actual programming language. And, you know, when you dive a little deeper, you can talk about DOM manipulation, and that's not really JavaScript in my eyes. But these are the three core, sort of the triforce, if you will, of front-end engineering. You have the HTML, which is, hey, this is sort of the bones, is how I look at it, the structure. CSS is the skin of how, you know, make it look pretty and go the right places. And then you have the JavaScript, which is kind of the brain of your application for how things are supposed to work.
That's a good analogy. I like that. So what's PHP like?
Definitely not a programming language. Yeah. So it's after the body dies and it's in the with the gravestone and everything, and just says here lies legacy.
all the WordPress developers are just screaming out in unison right after you said that, and Laravel and all that. No, all seriousness. Those are the three fundamentals that you needed to learn to front end engineering. What do you think about kind of more things like user experience or design or those things that kind of are tangentially related to those three technologies?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the more common questions I think we both get about front-end engineering is, how important is design for your role? Like, do you need to be able to open up InVision? Do you need to be able to create something in Photoshop? And that falls into the UI UX category. And although a lot of times you might, depending on the role, roles are, you know, in an organization that some, on a smaller organization, they'll try and combine a couple of roles where you're also a UI UX person with front-end engineering. But those are really two separate things. I would say that the design aspect is something that you don't really need to learn for front-end engineering. It never hurts. You know, so often people say, well, won't that make you more hireable? Yeah, but so will, like, being a full-stack dev or, you know, so on and so forth. But I find it very interesting, because as web development has sort of continued to grow in demand, so has the niche of the roles. And that's one that I really like. And I don't think enough organizations value what a good UI UX developer can bring to the table.
So what is UI UX? I'll just ask you a few questions.
Yeah. So user interface, user experience. Really, it's about making your web app make sense. That's how I think about it. Where, you know, there's certain patterns that web apps would follow, or really applications in general. Doesn't have to be web apps necessarily, but since we're talking about front-end engineering, we'll leave it at that. And, you know, where, hey, you know, let's have the, you know, these are the standard interactions that you would expect when you're doing a mobile-first application. And, you know, maybe we should have this button here, and it needs to match this color scheme so that people know it's a, you know, quote-unquote primary button versus secondary button. And these items that just make your application make sense and flow as easily as possible, right? So, like, you know, one thing I've heard some UI UX people say is that, like, one thing they hate, or at least some of them hate, is that sometimes you open some native apps and then they have, like, tutorials on how to use the app. And the thought is that if you have to teach somebody how to use your app, that generally speaking, it's too complicated, and that it's not, you know, the UI UX perspective is we should have designed our app in such a way that it's very easy to function and you don't really need an in-depth tutorial showing you where everything is. It should just function how you would think an app like this would.
That's good. I think a good person on your team that knows how to structure a web app in such a way that the user can easily flow from one page to the other that just makes sense is worth their weight in gold, because a good user experience could be the difference between you selling your product and not selling your product, from having most of your customers being frustrated using your app to them not being frustrated using your app. It could also, I think it crosses over to accessibility, which we haven't touched on yet, which is the way screen readers and people with disabilities access your site. So being able and thoughtful to understand how they would use your site so you can create a better user experience is important as well.
Yeah, definitely. And depending on the type of application that you're building, you know, there are standards that if you have an open public facing application that you need to meet certain criteria for accessibility, or you can get fined, or, you know, someone could, you know, it's not a good look, right? We want to support everybody that we can. It's not really all that hard. And there's a lot of great Chrome extensions that I've used in the past to help. They'll go and they'll scan your page. Say, hey, did you know that this is not standard? Or did you know you missed a ARIA label here or there, and so on and so forth. So definitely want to support, like anything, you want to support the people with limited capabilities in your community.
It's funny. I've been in organizations where that's been important. Like we have to watch it, you know, look at accessibility. That's really important. And then I've been in organizations where like that's not even thought of. Like people don't bring it up. It's not really a goal, and it's not really understood why we should be doing these things. I think it's an emerging field, and not emerging. I just think it's not well understood even to this day. What else do we need to understand? So we talked about JavaScript, HTML, CSS. What about, I'm going to throw out some things here. I'm thinking about like version control. Like a front engineer needs to know how to use their tools. I use GitHub. What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone should have a understanding of Git, especially get that first role. It's not something that is going to be super complex. That's going, you're like, oh, I have to master this in a weekend, but you need to be able to work with it and use it. And I am a believer that you should just use a terminal for most of this stuff, but that doesn't mean that you can't go and use, you know, like GitHub desktop or Gitkraken or whatever the hell tools are out there nowadays. But you need to understand how to clone a repo, how to push up, how to create a branch, how to pull, how to stage something, how to commit something, and writing a good commit message. These are all things you're going to be doing in the workplace, and getting started with that and just getting comfortable with it, be able to speak to it, is a great way to get going. You don't necessarily have to use GitHub, although I think that's probably the primary place that people store their code on, and sort of, you know, for better or worse. But I happen to be a big fan. I think Microsoft's been doing a great job with it since day one, giving free private repos. And they just gave away some. They just released another premium feature for free. I don't remember what it was, but I remember thinking like, "Oh, that's nice. They're just giving this stuff away."
Yeah, I enjoy GitHub too. I mean, for your GitLab or Bitbucket people out there, though, those are great solutions too. GitLab is great, and so is Bitbucket. And there's a handful of others I don't even know people use. I think there's like a built-in one. There's code repository for Amazon. I forget what it's called. There's one for Amazon, Microsoft, not Microsoft, but Amazon and Google too. I think they even have their own version control systems you can use. You know, it's funny, even though I've been using GitHub for quite a few years now, there's always things like I've looked at other people, how they use GitHub and how they use Git. Just Git in general, by the way, is not the same as GitHub. That's kind of a common mistake. Some people think Git is definitely a version controlled system, which can be used in multiple different, you know, apps out there. I mean, different services out there like GitHub or GitLab. But like the other day, someone was showing me all the cool things I guess I'm probably the last person to realize this. I've always used the command line to use GitHub or Git, I should say. And he was showing me like, no, just use the, like, stage all your files using VS Code inside here. And you can click this button to commit it and do this and this. And I'm like, oh, I just never use that. to this day, now I know what you're doing. Or the other day, someone in my group said, hey, we should be squashing all our commits. I'm like, I've never had to squash all my commits. How do we do this? So he was showing me how to like rebase and pick each commit and how to rewrite the history. And like, cool, like I'm even learning some of this stuff. And I guess it's just, there's just a whole lot to learn there. And as you go through your career, you'll be using more of those features. Are you the command? I think I've asked you this before. Do you use the VS Code integration for Git to do your staging of your files?
No, I don't. The only time I use it is when I have merge conflicts, and then I compare and contrast and, you know, accept previous, accept current, and, you know, or do a custom merge on myself. That's the only time I ever use it. It's very helpful. I imagine it does pretty much exactly what I'm doing now with the terminal. It's like, hey, I'm staging all, so I'm sure there's a button. I'm adding a commit message, so I'm sure it commits with a message. And I'm pushing, I'm sure it does the same thing. So I imagine it through the UI, it's going to be pretty identical. But I've been thinking about checking it out just because it's there and the merge aspect is very good. I have nothing against it. And so I've been thinking about it, but I don't. I've just been using the terminal. I did do GitHub Desktop back in the day when I was first getting going, and I didn't understand it at all. And then finally, I just did the terminal, and it made more sense.
Yep.
So yeah, getting started with some of these technologies, just so you know where to go, there's a lot of different places, right? We have YouTube channels where you can go and watch an hour tutorial on, you know, JavaScript or Git for that matter, probably 20 or 30 minute tutorial on Git. It won't be that long. And from there, you can go to websites like Codecademy or Free Code Camp. If you're looking to learn front-end development, I think Free Code Camp has an excellent section on tutorials and projects and things like that. And, you know, my general advice for people looking to get up and going is watch a 1 hour tutorial, go do a couple hour tutorials on like one of these coding sites, and then go build something very small, like a tribute page or a quote generator or something like that.
And there's a bunch of places too to get inspiration on what to create. I can't remember. I think Florin Pop, he has a whole GitHub repo on 100 project ideas. Yeah, let me see. I'm looking it up right now. App ideas. He calls it a collection of application ideas. And it has, yeah, it just has hundreds of app ideas and even has it segmented into like tier one beginner projects, tier two intermediate projects, tier three advanced projects. So if you're struggling to learn, like you've gone to Free Code Camp and you've been watching my channel and Dylan's channel, and you're starting to wanting to create some real projects, you know, take a look at Florin Pop's app ideas GitHub repo, and maybe there's something in there that strikes you as interesting. I think there's another common way of trying to think of ideas, and I think Dylan's mentioned this a few times, is to find out something you're passionate about. Like, let's say you are really into football or basketball, or maybe like knitting. I don't know. Maybe just think like, what would be like a fun app where I can like show all the different types of cross stitches? Or maybe there's an API. Like I like, I'm big into like sci-fi. I like science fiction movies, TV shows, things like that. Like maybe I could create a science fiction TV selector where anybody can search science fiction shows and it makes a list of it and you can talk to an API. So those are great ideas. Another kind of thought that just popped in my head too is don't be afraid to go to other websites and get inspiration. Now, typically when, you know, the websites that are out there online right now, all the code has been minified and they've all been condensed and it's more difficult to see exactly what's happening. But there's a lot of websites that have what are called source maps, and they have their source maps turned on. And you can actually see exactly all the code of how that website was created. And there's even Chrome extensions that allow you to download the HTML, CSS, and JavaScript and all the source map files on your computer. So you can even try to run it if you wanted to. So it's really cool to just kind of look at a website you're really interested in, pop in and look at the source. you can easily, the HTML and CSS is always accessible. Like, you can always see that. Usually you don't have any problems looking at the source of that inside Chrome or whatever. You just have to inspect it. JavaScript's kind of harder if they're all minified, means like they're all kind of smashed together and all the variable names are changed. Those are sometimes harder to look at, unless of course you have source maps. But just like looking at other websites and seeing how they do it is a really cool way of learning too.
Yeah, and one thing about sort of the why are we so fast tracking to projects, at least in my opinion, I think that's where the fun is. I think that's like, once you start having fun with learning, then it's much easier to come back to it the next day and be like, okay, even though I'm tired, even though I don't want to do this, I'm actually really enjoying this. And it doesn't seem like as much of a chore as it is. And building projects was when I fell in love with front-end development. When I built my first weather machine app, or like, you know, current, get to the local weather, finally understood APIs, that was the moment where I was like, okay, this is for me, and I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. And so I generally think that people, once they build something from scratch, from zero to, not hero, but zero to scratch, I guess, that will be the moment where it stops becoming like such a chore, and you start looking forward to it more and more.
I wish I had enough that time again that I used to have when I was first learning web development, and that I could just jump into a fun project like that and spend a few days or a few weeks on it just to learn something. I remember when I was first learning Ruby on Rails, I created an app, like a weight tracker app, so I can track my weight. And then I gave it to my wife and her friends who wanted something. They had like a competition between them and their friends, like a Biggest Loser type competition where people track their weight every week, and they didn't want to use some public website. They wanted just to keep it internally between them. And this is, you know, there's probably lots of websites they wanted to, they could use, but I wanted to do it. So I created a whole login authentication system. And then I learned how to use HTML, CSS to put it all together. And it looked okay. And the graph was okay. I mean, it wasn't beautiful or anything, but it was kind of a fun project to just dive in. And now I'm like, today I was telling Dylan before this call, like I got a YouTube video to do later on, and I have, you know, it's Father's Day today, and we got some stuff planned later today, and I'm just like so busy, and next week I'm busy too, so I can't get into deep dive into these projects that I used to. But that's, so if you are learning and you're listening right now and you're learning web development, or maybe even if you have just a little more time, yeah, you're lucky to jump into these projects because they're pretty fun.
Yeah, so, you know, we talked a little bit about HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and Git. And the next item that I'd recommend, and really for me, it's the final item. And that sounds like not too many core technologies to learn. And I don't think it is a front-end framework. You know, 99 out of 100 jobs that you'll work, especially as a junior aspiring developer, will be a front-end role there, that are front-end roles, I should say, will have a framework of something. Probably React nowadays, although with the Stack Overflow survey, I was expecting React to be like double or triple as popular as Angular, and it wasn't. It was like 50% more popular, but React or Angular or Vue would be the three main ones right now, but that could change next year for who knows. But really that,
you know,
having... Go ahead.
Oh, sorry to interrupt you. Do you know what the number one framework was that was still on it?
It was React. So it's, oh, I mean, if you count, yeah, jQuery. jQuery
was
higher.
jQuery is still number one.
Yeah, you don't want those jobs, though. Like, it's, you know, people give me shit about crapping on jQuery and crapping on PHP. But, like, statistically speaking, if you're working in jQuery or, like, WordPress, yeah, there's jobs in it. But they're going to be oftentimes lower paid jobs that are have a lower barrier of entry. And that's okay to get started. But I've mentored so many developers who are like, hey, I can't get out of my job that pays, you know, 30, 40 grand less than this other job because I spent 5 years working in jQuery and everyone's looking for React or Angular or experience in a front end framework. And so I'd rather people not take the low hanging fruit. But it's also not a framework, right? It's a library that just creates a bunch of helper methods for you at the end of the day, at least in my point of view.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny that jQuery was number one like most used framework slash library from everyone on the Stack Overflow survey, because we tend to think that jQuery is dead, but it's definitely still out there. There's tons of legacy sites that still use it. But I tend to agree with Dylan. Obviously, you want to pick a modern JavaScript framework slash library that most people are using, and of course, that's React. I say this every episode, though, being a big Vue fan, that Vue isn't a bad way to go either. Definitely, you know, React is still more popular, but Vue isn't a bad way to learn either. And there's jobs out there for Vue developers as well. And so, but I would say pick one between Vue, React, and Angular that really speaks to you. And then also do a quick search in your local area. Find out what jobs, what are the front end devs jobs are. Are they looking for React, Vue, Angular? Maybe you kind of try to make your choice that way too. And to realize too that if you can specialize in one technology that not a whole lot of people are using, it may be harder for you to find a job, but you may be paid more. So if you can become the expert in SQL, MySQL, partitioning, like become a really master at this one technology, you probably could find a job that will really help out. But for generalist front-end engineering, let's just stick with the three big ones.
Yeah, and for me, those are the four main core things I think you're going to need. There are some other sort of preferred category stuff that comes in. I would say being familiar with maybe a pre-compiled CSS language like Sass or Less would be a nice to have that I think some organizations are looking for. And that's something that you can pick up again in a weekend and, like, you know, start just adding into your workflow piece by piece. I don't think that should make or break you, but again, it's just something that you have to remember you're dealing with non-technical people. And so, like, they just get requirements and they treat all of them the same a lot of the times, but that's something that would be nice to have.
I have a few more that I think are important for front-end engineering. Just learning how the internet works, understanding the server and the client, how to create calls to an API, understanding cores, understanding like a modicum of security of how you secure information, understanding like WebSockets might be handy, because that eventually in your career, you might have to have something like that. You might have to talk to something like that. I mean, having those skills, I think, are really important for front-end development. Also, CLI, like getting understanding the command line, being able to change directories, you know, changing your password. Maybe this isn't used as often, but knowing how to SSH, go logging into servers, being able to update code on the fly like that, using some sort of a text editor of some sort or IDE, you know, bonus points if you're using Vim, because I'm a big Vim fan. Knowing how to exit Vim, which is like the number one question on Stack Overflow for years, was how do you exit Vim? Because so nobody knows how to do it. I'm a big Vim fan, or maybe if not Emacs, and then take one step up, learning your IDE really well, like VS Code, I think is, you know, pretty important to learn your IDE and to be a front-end engineer. Also, I think near and dear to Dylan's heart, testing, another really important thing that you should probably get to know to be a great developer, you know, learning how to do unit testing, knowing the difference between unit testing, integration testing, end-to-end testing, what libraries you should use. A lot of this is built into your framework of choice that you're ending up using, but just kind of understanding that performance could be also another thing. So I just wanted to throw out a few more.
Yeah, testing, that's going to be my sort of second preferred one, is that I think getting familiar with, at least at the bare bones, unit testing, and understanding what it is, like what the intent of testing is and how it speeds up your development process. That's one of those items I think make you stand apart from other, maybe people who are aspiring developers that are trying to get their first front-end engineering job. I would say that would be the very next item that I would learn. And it's also one of the items I think makes you a better developer once you start, you know, especially if you learn test-driven development and you start thinking about edge cases ahead of time rather than just the happy pass, which I think a lot of us do by default, myself included. So sometimes you have to force yourself out that. But I just can't stress enough how, like, testing for any part of your career is something that I think we all need to do better with. And if you do it early on, that's definitely a strong preference. It's something that stands out to people who do value that, and that your resume will look a little bit cleaner and a little bit more eye-catching than those who don't have it.
Do you still, I know you've been in a couple of organizations for a while. Do you feel like after you've been there for a while that testing becomes less important? Like at the beginning, you're like testing, but then after a while, it's not as important. Like, have you been able to do the same amount of tests you have when you started?
Yes, I have, but it's not easy. It's anybody who's been a software engineer long enough, what's the first thing they tell you to throw out when things are tight? They tell you to throw the testing out, right? Like that's just it's like, oh, we'll just skip the testing or we'll circle back. However, you know, one of the things is that when you write code in a TDD way, the big benefit is you can do tests first. And so, like, in order to get the code, you write a failing unit test, but you have to write the test first. That's like the biggest benefit. And you deliver better code and whatnot. But there are times where I'm even guilty of it, of like, shit, I know, like, I didn't do TDD this time, because it was like, sometimes it's hard, right? Like, I was working on a, this last sprint on a template generation service that essentially takes in our data model and then creates a dynamic Excel document with 8 custom rows and then, you know, 100 rows that get outputted based off of the cell structure and whatnot. And so you have to keep track of every single cell value in order to create the template correctly. That's something that I just like, I wrote tests after. Like I was like, I don't know that I'm going to be able to write tests for this and have them be very useful tests, because otherwise I might just be trying to solve the errors in the tests when sometimes, you know, depending on the complexity, it's hard to write those tests ahead of time.
I've been in organizations where we've just decided to call a test bankruptcy. Like we've just, too many of the tests are broken. Too many of the tests don't work right. Too many of the tests like sometimes pass and sometimes don't pass. And too many of them are commented out. So we've just said, you know, screw it. We're done. Like we're not going to, we turned it off in our continuous integration deployment pipeline because it was such a headache. So it's hard in those organizations to be like, okay, we're going to do testing again. And then going through like piecemeal through, you know, 150 tests, you know, 50 of them are commented out, and then be like, hey, you know, if we're going to really do this right, I need like at least a few days, and if not, maybe a week, just to go through every single test here, delete out the ones we don't need anymore, fix the ones that are broken, comment everything out. Like it's really hard to do that. Just a side tangent of some things I've gone through.
Yeah. And I think it's important to paint, like, you know, there's the ideal scenario, which is oftentimes, you know, again, the happy path, right? Such as with testing. And then there's the pragmatic sort of realistic scenario that everything's not going to go perfectly. And like, sometimes you have a give and a take. I will say that like in those scenarios, you know, having the right build pipelines that, and the right processes and having clearly defined definitions of ready and done and all that sort of stuff, that helps. But staying on top of it is much easier than having to go back and fix all these things and go through. And, you know, the idea that it has to be all or nothing, I think, is something that falls through the cracks a bit when you start looking at it, where, you know, like, oh, well, these tests are failing or this and that. And like, sometimes you say, okay, let's declare bankruptcy on the previous test suite, but let's at least, well, you know, comment them out X amount, whatever it is, but perhaps moving forward, now we adhere to the standards that we all agreed to. And I know that I've had to fight some, you know, quote unquote battles at work, because at the end of the day, like if the developer is not going to be one to protect the code and you're the one that has to work towards it and you work on it, and you have to be the representative that then says, hey, it's going to take four times as long because we don't know what's going on in this code anymore. That it's kind of up to you to sort of push back. And it's not easy, though. It's definitely not easy, but there are you know, compromises that you can make along the way to try and get back into the swing of things.
I think that's what I need to do. I think that's in a couple of code bases I've worked in, maybe that's a good approach, just to be like, okay, we're going to have 95% of these test cases commented out, but let's start with just this five right here. And let's slowly build these up as new features come in. We can go back in, because you can't ever get from the business. This is kind of front-end engineering baseball, back-end front-end engineering insider baseball a little bit. But what you're going to find out is when you go to corporations, it's, and Dylan's mentioned this many times, it's always go, 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 go. And trying to make your case for like, hey, maybe we should slow down and write test cases and do all this is kind of difficult. But if you could kind of like be like, well, I'm not going to specifically put a project to fix all our test cases, but maybe if we comment them all out, especially since most of them are broken, but we slowly start maybe inching forward as we go into each one of these components and fix the test case and leave that as a part of our normal feature enhancement or hot fix or whatever, then we can start slowly like making testing great again. I guess that's what I want to say.
Yeah, and for those of you who may feel uncomfortable about this, people, when they hire me, like these are things that I have at the top of my resume, that I'm looking for teams that value quality and testing. It says right in there. And like, you know, when I go and interview, I talk about how I test my code and what I do for this and that. And I look at it as like, they want to hire me because these are the things I value as a software engineer. And so it's up to me to sort of to make sure that I can accomplish that. Like my last project or my current project, when I started it, that we were in the exact situation that Eric described where, hey, there's 50 tests in this entire project, 45 of them don't pass. So what do? Right. We have a 0.1% of test coverage. So, you know, a year later, you know, we commented out the, or I commented out those 45 tests. I fixed a few of them, comment the majority of them out. And then a year later, we have close to 1600 tests in our application as we move forward. And so, you know, there's still only about 2/3 test coverage in the entire application. But generally, you're looking to get around 90%. You know, anything above 90 is stellar, in my opinion, because you can't test everything. But at least 2/3 of the majority of our app is now tested, and greenfield development into the app is fully tested. And so, yeah, it's not maybe an ideal scenario, but it's a much better scenario than just sort of throwing in the towel. And you know, as you go and you touch some of these things, you make changes, you add a unit test to cover that change, or you say, oh, hey, I don't think this scenario is covered because it broke as I was testing it. And then you say, oh, yeah, it's one of our common out tests. Let me go fix it. And so you can make it. It may not happen overnight, but you can definitely make progress over time.
We need to do an episode on testing if we haven't already. Did we do an episode on testing? I think we do have episode 19, Should You Test Your Code? Testing Guide 101, episode 19. So if you guys are interested more about testing, then you can go to that episode. Which, by the way, anytime I talk about testing on my YouTube channel, I bet this episode didn't have that many downloads. People, it's not a popular topic. It's so important, but it's not that popular. It's
because the average developer is garbage. Like, that's a harsh thing to say. But the average developer is just there to collect checks, and they don't care about delivering a good product because they're not going to be there long. They spend 18 months at a job. And I'm guilty of this as well in terms of not being places long. So I don't want to think I'm just throwing shade at everybody. But when you only spend 18 months at a job, you can write shit code because you don't have to maintain it for 5+ years. And, you know, you're just going to jump jobs. But when you progress and you want to make sure that you're not repeating the same year 10 years in a row, and you want to become a better developer, by the time you hit year two, you should see like testing has value. Even if you don't like unit testing, maybe like integration testing. But so often people are so afraid to speak up for their work and speak up for themselves. And this is, you know, it plays into the whole imposter syndrome, that you get sort of stuck in doing what non-technical people want you to do when it's your job as a professional and as the technical individual to push back. not to say no, but to push back and, you know, make sure that you're able to deliver what they want. And sometimes you got to do what's best for them.
You're here.
Anyhow, any other main things we want to talk about when it comes to front end engineering?
Yeah, I think we've covered a lot. I mean, that's a pretty high level, but we did talk about some really important things like testing. And I think front end engineering is a great career path. I think most people that want to get into web development should definitely look at it. And I'm hoping more and more people can join. Also, being that our name of our podcast is Self-Taught or Not, we'll say that you don't need a CS degree to become a front-end engineer. It seems to be very popular amongst the boot camps, like we said at the beginning of the episode, and self-taught people seem to love this career path, and rightfully so, and it does pay pretty well. I think the most, if you want to, let me ask you a follow-up question, Dylan, maybe to wrap this up. What is the next area to go to after front-end engineering? Is it back-end engineering? Is it data science, DevOps? I mean, what do you think?
I mean, I think the goal should be eventually to get to full stack, and really full stack, the next major piece of that is backend. And typically, you know, the average full stack developer is backend, front end. And there's other little, like, you need to have a little bit of general knowledge in DevOps. You need to have a little bit of general knowledge and maybe even UI, UX and cloud and whatnot. But generally speaking, it's front end, back end. So I would say getting comfortable with RESTful APIs would be a good place to start, building microservices and endpoints and things like that. Just general backend development and some databases and understanding more of a high level of how, you know, what a query is and, you know, things you might query by. Forget about the actual core technology of maybe MongoDB or SQL, but what it is that you're trying to do there. That would be my general advice.
I said that's a great point, because you'll find out too, as you go through the front end engineering world, especially if you're creating your own projects, there are some ways that we can do things no code, and there's some services out there that you can use, like software as a service or functions as a service and backend as a service. There's all sorts of services, but it doesn't really replace like the power of having a good backend programming language based app that you created that has endpoints that you can talk to. It feels very powerful, and you can do a lot of things that you couldn't do just with the front end alone. Because you'll find out that there'll be just some scenarios out there when you're creating your apps that, like, I need a back end to do this. I need to store data somewhere. I need to do this. And you can, yes, you can go through all these like third party services and end up, you know, doing the free plan on MongoDB, Atlas, and Firebase and all these other services that allow you to sort of have a back end in the cloud somewhere that you don't have to code. But eventually, like, those things will have some limitations. Those things, those free plans won't be big enough for what you're trying to do. And you're going to have to actually write an actual back end code. And that's when you're going to be pulling things like Ruby on Rails or Node.js with Express or just a bunch of different backend services, .NET or Java or something like that, which is going to be really powerful and can do a lot more things than just putting all these little services everywhere.
Yep. So good luck, everybody. Bye.
Later.
Hey guys, thanks for watching. If you want to find more about what I'm up to, go to dylanisrael.com.
And if you want to know what I'm up to, you can check out my website at eric.video. If you haven't already, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out. And if you do, you might even be featured on our next episode. Don't forget to check out the website at selftaughtornot.com. From there, you can sign up for a mailing list where we give away free courses and a bunch of cool stuff. And we'll also let you know when the next episode comes out. And finally, if you didn't know, we have a Facebook group. It's called Code, Tech, and Caffeine. We have over 10,000 members. And you can find the link at selftaughtornot.com. So come join us. We have tons of developers willing to help you guys, mentor you guys. Check it out. Just make sure you go to selftaughtornot.com and check out the Code, Tech, and Caffeine link. Thanks and take care.